There's a reason that Stacking Benjamins is one of the very top money podcasts on the planet. One of them is Joe Saul-Sehy. He and his co-host, OG, almost single-handedly created a whole genre of shows about money that are actually fun and entertaining and informative when it comes to being much better with your finances and investing and the balance between life and money. On this episode, Joe talks about his new book, Stacked, and his one rule to rule them all. I'm Wes Moss. The prevailing thought in America is that you'll never have enough money and it's almost impossible to retire early. Actually, I think the opposite is true. For more than 20 years, I've been researching, studying, and advising American families, including those who started late, on how to retire sooner and happier. So my mission with the Retire Sooner podcast is to help a million people retire earlier while enjoying the adventure along the way. I'd love for you to be one of them. Let's get started. Joe Saul-Sehy, which is like having royalty on the show.
Oh, man. Come
Seriously.
On.
It is. It's like when you walk through the door, I was like, I don't know. It's like having Kevin Costner walk in the door from my favorite show, Yellowstone.
Stop. Please stop. Stop.
Maybe go back. So did you start in Michigan? Like, were you born there?
I was. I'm from Kalamazoo, halfway between Detroit and Chicago, West Michigan. Yep. And my practice, though, was in Detroit when I was a financial planner. So I was a financial planner for 16 years.
Yep.
I was also a media spokesperson for the big company I was with.
Yep.
The people that do media all the time, but I was the guy they'd call on that was the knowledge expert. So, and then for 9 years, I was the TV guy at Channel 7 in Detroit.
In Detroit. So you started doing media and a financial advisor. You're a financial advisor. You were good at media, and then they kept asking you to do more.
Yes.
By the way, I spent a lot of time in Michigan, so I'm a big Michigan. Did you go back? Are you a Michigan?
I do. We were just in the Upper Peninsula.
Oh, you go to the UP?
We did this time. I've only been there maybe twice, but my wife is on this quest to go to all the national parks. And what a great time, by the way, to go to national parks during COVID, right?
Yeah.
Just get out on a trail with nobody around. So we went to Isle Royal, which when you look at it, looks like it's Isle Royale, but it's really Isle Royal.
And that's above the...
Way almost to Canada and Lake Superior. It was a 3-hour tour, like Gilligan's Island. It's like a 3-hour boat ride out to this island. We stayed overnight at the one place where they have electricity and flush toilets. And it was beautiful.
It is beautiful. Michigan is so underrated. I used to go to Holland, Michigan.
I love it.
For like 15, 16 years. And then I remember going to the airport once I have 4 kids, so 2 of the kids. And I remember the Delta, like checking in, and we were flying to, maybe it was Grand Rapids.
Yeah.
And I remember them saying, oh, you're going to Grand Rapids. Like, that was a bad thing. And I was like, it's like the reputation, it's like the most underrated state. And then we've continued to go back, and we go pretty far, almost all the way north before the UP.
Yeah.
Like Petoskey.
Oh, beautiful area.
It's so nice.
Great.
So it's a great secret.
The whole Traverse City. In fact, it's funny when you say great secret. When you get off the boat at Isle Royal, park ranger, because the whole thing is a national park, greets you, and you do this mandatory talk where they tell you about the island, and of course, you know, you can't burn things and whatever. But he said, as he's finishing his talk, he goes, and I'm wrecking it right now by even mentioning this, but he said, we know you're going to like it as much as we do. And if you do, don't tell anybody.
I kind of feel that way too, even though I'm talking about on the podcast. Yeah. But the other thing is that it is hard to get to. So I was traveling back and forth to Atlanta to Michigan for like a month. And it was not easy.
No.
Yeah. If you have a private plane, which you may be on the track to do that. Right. But it was really hard. Like, I was driving from Petoskey down to Traverse City, and then, or I would connect in Detroit and come to Atlanta. It's not easy to get to.
No.
So I don't think it'll ever get overcrowded.
No, that makes it even better.
So you decided to, as a financial advisor, financial planner, What was the moment where you're like, I'm out of here? Can describe to us, to our audience, like when you decided to get out of or sell the practice?
I had a mentor, and he was a guy that kind of oversaw our region for the company I was with. And he did something that nobody ever does, Wes. He actually gave us 2 weeks' notice, which if anybody knows that industry, at least the part that I worked in like a Jerry Maguire type place where you leave at midnight with all the client files and then everybody's calling them at 6 a.m. But he wasn't doing that. He wrote this long note and it said, I've been lucky that I've done a good job of saving and I don't know really what I want to do with my life. And I know this is really good, but I know he said, and this is a direct quote. He said, I know I have other mountains to climb. And so,
and this is a, like a tenured financial advisor.
Yeah. This is a guy who's 40. And at the time I'm getting ready to turn 40. And he said, I've got all these other mountains I want to climb. So I'm leaving just so I have the time because I work so much working on other people's money and other people's goals that I don't work on my own. So I'm going to take this time. I'm going to figure out what it was. And you know what's cool? Chris not only influenced me, but a lot of other people. He, when he said other mountains to climb, he climbed Mount Everest twice. He's climbed almost all of the tall peaks in the world. He now runs an adventure travel company in Colorado. The dude loves what he does. And I,
so he had another calling too. Big
he
time.
Totally did. Well, and it was funny for a lot of us. I looked at my life and I said, you know what? I like this. I don't love it. There's pieces that I really like. I think I would, and I've done a good job saving. I'm going to become a high school teacher and a track coach, which is really what I wanted to do.
Really? So like that was what you would, in your mind, your financial advisor for 16 years.
Yes.
You're like, I really want to go do this.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm going to sell the business.
Yeah.
This bag of money. My wife loves what she does. So luckily we have her income coming in still. So, so I sold the business and I went to school to become a high school teacher and a track coach at age 40 because I had other mountains too.
Yeah.
I learned, by the way, and clients of mine that were teachers told me this, and God bless teachers, but they said, you're going to spend a lot of time fighting administration. And when I started taking classes to become a teacher, all my professors talked about was how I was going to be fighting administration. And how hard it was going to be to teach. At the same time, because I'd done a bunch of media, I had friends saying, hey, could you write my TV scripts for me? So I got hired by a friend just because it was fun. And then another friend had, you know, his client newsletters. And so, and I would love it when he would tell me, he's like, I love all the stuff I apparently do with my family. Cause I would make these analogies. You know, I took Lori and the family camping this weekend and I was sitting around the campfire and I saw these sparks and that made me realize that diversification, what, you know what I mean? So he's like, I love this makeup stuff that I do, that were these analogies. And I was having a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah.
So that then led to a blog. A blog led to a podcast. And
when you guys started that though, it was like, people were like, oh, you're going to do a what?
Yeah.
In the very beginning, it was so nascent.
Oh, no. You know, it was horrible with Cheryl telling her friends what I do. My wife telling her friends, like, your husband does what? So we had, he has a podcast. That means he spends, which our show's live
from mom's. He's in the basement.
Yeah. Live from mom's basement, right? Is the Stacking Benjamin show. And
when you first started doing that, you did, it's funny you mentioned too about kids, is that I think often because our business too, we're always coming up with content, always talking about how do we tell a story from another perspective? Because we, again, with a lot of tried and true things, but there's not an infinite amount. There's like 20 things we need to talk about over and over again. And if it weren't for my kids, I feel like I wouldn't have any content because they're always doing something that reminds me, just like you just said, like I made this bet, kind of a bet with Jake, who's my 9-year-old, who's a really can barely hit a golf ball. But we were playing golf in Michigan. We were up in like Harbor Springs area. Yeah. And there was a tree in the middle of the fairway. And like, I'll do this story quickly. He's like, Dad, can you go over the tree? And I'm like, no way, go over the tree. I'm going to aim for the tree, Jake, because I know I can't hit it.
Yes.
So I'll go left or right, which you kind of need to split this fairway. He's like, well, what if I hit the tree? I'm like, dude, if you hit the tree, I'm like, I'll give you $100. So of course, like the only time he hits someone, he nails the tree in the center, he's going ballistic. I give him $100 like that day. And then we came back from Michigan and he had hid the $100 and he lost it. So we were like 3 hours into the drive and it was, you know, he's like, oh my God, he was going to pay for something at a gas station and he lost the $100 and he was like crying. He's like, I can't. And so the story was about how much worse it was to lose the $100 than it was to win it. And he was psyched to like, it made his day. He was like, this is the best day of my life. But when he lost it, he was like sad about it for days.
Oh yeah.
So it turned into a story about like, we're just born with this whole like loss aversion thing. Like literally it's genetic. And I read an article about it.
Yeah.
But the kid thing really does help us tell our stories.
Yeah.
Too.
No, absolutely. My one of my favorite stories is coming home from work one night, and Cheryl was at the neighbor's house. My kids have every light in the house on, Wes. Every single light. We had three televisions. Every single TV was on. Guess how many people are watching TV in my house? Nobody. Yeah. My house is like Disneyland. So then what we did, we actually took our, you know, this is back when my kids are 26. So we still got the monthly bill in the mail. And so we made this game. We took out some graph paper. We made it into a game where let's see how low, like a limbo, let's see how low we can make our bill.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And it was funny. Yeah. Then I would turn on a TV and I would leave the room to get something to drink to come back. And my son is turn the TV off. So I completely changed it, but yeah.
Well, tell us how low you got that bill, by the way. What was your record low?
God, I don't even remember. I think we had a month. It was in the spring, and I think it was like $12.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it was nothing.
I need to do that game with my kids. So when you were first starting podcasts, you weren't expecting to make money.
No.
At all.
No, we were just messing around.
And how many years before you started to say, wait, this is like a real business. How long did that take?
We were at a...
asking for a friend.
Yeah, that's right. First of all, if you're podcasting for the money, you're in it for the wrong reason. Yeah, number one.
Good point.
That is like job one. Whenever a new podcaster comes to me and they're like, so when do I monetize? I'm like, dude, get a story first, right? But we started off, we had no idea what we were doing. We'd done radio together. So we knew we had some chemistry, OG, my co-host and I. And we also knew we didn't want to be the last word in personal finance, like a Dave Ramsey or Susie Orman.
Mm-hmm.
But we weren't going to be that. I also didn't want to yell at people about their money. No offense, but I just didn't want to do that.
You need $10 million to retire minimum or else you're going to die in the poorhouse.
And a private island.
Yeah.
Come on.
On a private island.
On a private island.
Unbelievable.
Yes. Hello. So we didn't want any of that. We instead, I'm listening to this podcast. People kept telling me I should have a podcast because of all the media stuff I'd done.
Yeah.
And I had no idea of format. One day I'm mowing my lawn and I hear these guys click and clack on Car Talk.
I remember them. I grew up with them.
Yes.
Yeah, I love them.
So for people that don't know Car Talk is this NPR show. They still play it even though one of the guys passed away 2 years ago. They still play the show because they're so evergreen. But these guys, these two brothers, they would help people with their cars. And I realized, Wes, that I'm learning nothing about a car. But I'm having a blast.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I realized, at that time, 10 years ago, I couldn't think of anybody that had this show that was kind of really much more fun and surround sound than you know,
like old time radio,
hard money lesson. Yeah.
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 And so that was an original inspiration.
That was the original inspiration. We thought we were taking it seriously. Mm-hmm. I went to a conference called Podcast Movement, which is in Nashville, went to a, 1 year. I'm just trying to think of what year it was. I guess it doesn't matter. It was, but
within the last 10 years,
on the main stage, this guy, Roman Mars from 99% Invisible, a great NPR show. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of respect for, was telling me about how they do their show. And I realized that my version of being a professional at this and his were two different things. Mm-hmm. And he was kicking my butt. So we changed everything. And that's when we really started thinking about monetization, about advertisers. Mm-hmm. We had advertisers before that, but we really got professional. I'm going to say probably year number four, three or four.
Dig in. If you're a podcaster listening, like dig in. Yeah. So
yeah. Three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
This is obviously the title of this podcast, Retire Sooner, which has been a mantra of mine for years and years before the podcast. And I love this research about happy retirees versus unhappy. And I've spent a decade doing that. But so I want to ask you, Joe, about maybe the cons or the struggles of people retiring and then particularly retiring early.
Yeah.
Before we do that though, is that you, I love the way you guys talk a lot about financial advisors. You have a background in financial advisors. You are very clear about saying, hey, make sure you don't get, you know, fleeced by a financial advisor.
Yeah.
But you should have a financial advisor. I want to just maybe talk through that relationship. Yeah. Like, what are your thoughts on financial advice and advisors, et cetera?
I was telling somebody about this on the way to the conference today. You and I are at a conference, FinCon. Mm-hmm. And
if for like the next month, people are going to think I'm just living in Austin, by the way. I actually came here to interview Joe the Tamale House, which was started in 1952.
Delicious.
It's on 6th Street. Have you been there?
No.
Oh my God.
I heard from everybody it's delicious.
Literally, like it's.
I had Franklin Barbecue yesterday.
Was it amazing?
Incredible. I've had a lot of barbecue. Austin.
I'm moving.
Being a Texas guy now, Texas yeah. transplant. A lot of barbecue the last 10 years, but God. Nothing like Franklin Barbecue. But
I want to move to Austin.
But the yeah. big thing about financial advisors we were talking about is there are a lot of people that attend this conference, this influencer mm-hmm. conference, this creator conference, who will tell you don't have an advisor. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought that is the most ridiculous thing on earth. Mm-hmm. I want to surround myself with people that are smarter than me. I want to be the dumbest person in the room. Mm-hmm. I feel like if I do have one time to live this life, I need mentorship and help, and I can learn lessons from people that have been there. Mm-hmm. So while we can debate, is that a licensed financial advisor or somebody who's wealthy and got their X way? My feeling about quote advisors mm-hmm. is I should have them. Mm-hmm. I should have a lot. I overpay for coaching. I know I pay too much money for coaching, mm-hmm. but it's those coaches that always see my blind side mm-hmm. and to be arrogant enough mm-hmm. to think that I shouldn't have people on my team protecting my downside. So, and by the way, when a lot of people talk about they were fleeced by a financial advisor, mm-hmm. there are bad apples out there. There are many, many more people though that go, well, I don't have a financial advisor because I had a bad experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like to turn that question around, Wes, and say, so did you have a bad experience because you're horrible at interviewing mm-hmm. and you didn't choose the right person to be on your team, or do all financial advisors stink? I think the logical conclusion isn't that all advisors stink. I think that, and every smart person I worked with when I was an advisor, I wasn't their only advisor. They had, mm-hmm. you know, diet experts. They had people helping them yeah. train. They do, you know,
they believe in help. They believe in coaching.
Sure.
And that's the other thing I think that maybe gets lost is that if you think about people that have financial advisors, they're very often extremely smart, extremely productive humans already.
Yeah.
And I think about the thought that they could figure out how to be an advisor. Like it's not as though they couldn't figure it out or be yeah. just as good as maybe their advisor.
Yeah.
But it's all those other things, the objectivity, the helping with emotion, a second set of, I love the way you say about protecting a blind side, because an advisor might not help you every single day, but even if they help you once or twice a year, it could be a huge thing.
Yeah.
So your point is that choose the right advisor, but also take your own responsibility. That's
sure.
Talk about that.
Well, yeah, you definitely don't want somebody who's going to take it away from you. You need to know about your money. Mm-hmm. You need to know about your goals. You need to know about the fuel that's getting you there. You don't have to know everything about everything, mm-hmm. but you certainly need to know what your plan is and what your strategy is, because you're the CEO of your life, right? But I need people to do, you know, when I was an advisor, I would tell my clients that 95% of what I do, you can do. I just do it faster. Mm-hmm. Like I'm a smart guy. I could make a car. I lived in Detroit. I could make a car. It would run like crap. It'd be horrible. It'd take yeah. me 10 years, but I can do it.
Yeah.
I'm a smart dude. I'd rather buy one from, yeah. you know, one of the Detroit auto manufacturers. I'd rather do that.
You've done this over the years. You've talked about the kind of the pros and the cons of stopping work to some extent, yes. or, and again, a retirement is that can be defined a lot of ways.
Yes.
Right? I talk about the retirement gray zone. There's full retirement. There's early retirement. The mission here is to help 1 million people be able to retire sooner if they really want to. And that's yeah. different for everybody. I think we think of the great parts of early retirement. What are the things that you see, particularly whether it's traditional age, like, hey, I'm in my 60s and I'm retired, or even some of the younger, the really retire sooner people? Like, what are some of the biggest challenges that we don't see as much, or the cons of early retirement?
I have a friend named Dusty who just this morning was asking me a question. Her dad just retired.
Oh, Dusty's a woman.
Dusty's a woman. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. And Dusty, she was telling me her dad just retired and he's miserable. He's absolutely miserable. Because Wes, he thought about the money, but he didn't think about everything else. And for me, retirement's not about the money. It's about the everything else. The money is a fuel to just to get you there. And you think about how many years we're going to be retired for now. We're not going to be retired for 5 years or like, you know, you've seen the statistic about when they first created Social Security.
Right.
And like the life expectancy was like, you're going to get
tomorrow.
It and die. Right? Yeah. you're gone right away. And now people are on Social Security for 30 years.
Yeah.
Right. 30, 35. So this is a whole third of your life you're going to have. And we don't think about what we're going to do. And she said he's miserable and he's driving everybody crazy because he's counting down the days till his wife retires and she doesn't retire for another year. And he continually is like, you think we could just get you retired? He just wants somebody to do stuff with.
Somebody to play with. I got nobody to hang out with.
Yeah. My dad retired early from General Motors. He was 30 and out. So he retired at 54. See,
pretty good pension.
Pretty great pension. Yeah. So 54 years old, retired. You know what he started doing, Wes?
That's early.
He started hanging out with guys 20 years older than he was. And then all of a sudden, my dad had all these aches and pains.
Huh.
All kinds of this thing. And my mom and I realized it was because he's hanging out with these nice guys, by the way, nice people.
He's hanging out with 75-year-olds.
They're having aches and pains, but all the guys that are 54 are still working.
Yeah.
So he had to
What did he do? Did he turn it around?
We had to have an intervention. We actually had to tell him, we're like, Dad, you're hanging out with, you need to find people, do things with people your age, not with people that are 20 years older than you all the time. And he still does things with these guys, did things with these guys for a long time. But he also realized then he needed to find friends that were younger.
So what about, have you encountered any even younger than that? It's kind of these really early retirees. I mean, that's 54 is really young.
Well, right? here's what I really worry about. Some of the fire crowd, which I think is awesome, right? I think it's absolutely awesome. These people that from a young age are already thinking about being financially independent. That's pretty badass.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's cool.
But what I know and you know is that I'm 53 years old. I feel a hell of a lot differently about lifestyle at 53 than I did when I was 40, than I did when I was 25. So when somebody tells me they've accumulated $400,000 and they're now retiring at 28, I don't want to live in a tent in the woods, Wes. I don't. When I was 28, that was cool.
That was cool.
That was awesome. But you know what? I'm considerably more bougie now.
Yeah.
I am way more bougie. I did not want that. Like, there's no way.
It is interesting. A fire has been around, I don't know, 10 or 15 years, maybe.
What's funny is, let's talk about this for a second. Has it really? I think it's been around forever. Uh-huh. And yet we kind of.
Well, we didn't have a good acronym.
No,
though.
We gave it
You've got to have an acronym.
That's right.
There has a great visual to it.
Got to have the acronym. That's what was missing the whole time.
It needed its own branding. It's always about the PR campaign. But I almost wonder if that group, and I've met with a fair amount of. Let's call it the kids, the adult children of folks that I've worked with, and they may be 60 or 55 and the kids are 28 and they're full on fire.
Movement. Yeah.
It's almost as though, at least since the acronym started, we almost haven't even had enough time for the fire movement to even really have a long period of time not working.
Well, yes.
Like if you're part of fire and you're in the middle of it, you may only be 5 years into living in a tent. And it's like, I always wonder about like, what happens when you have kids and then you realize that you don't like the school that your kids are in. And you're like, oh, wait a minute, I'm going to have to pay for this. I'm going to pay. It's just different phases of life that end up, you just don't even know what you don't know when you're 28.
But no, I agree. And I also think that it is, I mean, with them, we talk about for older people, it's more, I didn't spend enough time planning what I want to do. I think with younger people in the fire movement, a lot of these people, Wes, have never experienced a market downturn. Like they were still coming out of college or even in high school when the whole problem was happening in 2007, 2008.
Mm-hmm. So they've had an amazing ride in the market too.
It certainly feels like.
A couple big bumps, but it's been an amazing run.
I saw there was a woman on a Facebook ad I saw a week and a half ago talking about how she was going to teach you the secrets of investing because these financial advisors are talking about 8% and she can easily get 12%. Yeah, well, first of all, if you're hiring your financial advisor based on a rate of return, you're making like a big mistake.
There's no guarantees. There is none. That sounds like a guaranteed disaster.
It absolutely does. And when you start basing your decisions on, I can get a 12% rate of return from somebody that clearly when I saw her, she was too young to be there during that last downturn. Mm-hmm. I lost my hair between 2007, 2008 and the tech wreck in 2000 to 2002. Like those are brutal years.
Yeah, you were an advisor through a really long bear, basically a flat market, like yeah, basically
nothing.
2000 to 2011. I remember the Dow getting to 10, dropping to 9, dropping to 8.
Right.
And then eventually getting back to 10. It wasn't until year 11 that I was in the business, and I was very young in the business. The first essentially 11 years of being in the investment business, the market went from 10 to 10.
To 10.
On the Dow.
Yes. Yeah. And yet you've got younger investors that say, forget international because international doesn't do anything. Well, if you're me during that period, the US stock market did nothing. Yeah. If you didn't have international, like you were.
Yeah. I want to start talking about the book for a minute here. First of all, this is the kind of thing where you have so much content. You've done like, I don't know how many, literally 1,000 episodes, interviews. And part of the idea of the book here, and I know that you gave a talk here just before you came in to do the podcast, and it's something, it's kind of the theme of the book or the way you write it is Hardy Boys adventure meets like a Cub Scout guidebook kind of, right?
Yes, yes.
And then you're trying to take, I can't imagine how you whittle down 1,000 episodes of all that advice. So tell us about Stacked.
Yeah.
Coolest name for a book. Love it.
Thanks.
When I heard the name of your book, I was like, that's an awesome name.
Well, it is co-written by a woman who you know very well.
Oh,
Emily Guy Birkin is my co-author.
And actually, before I did a podcast, she wrote 5 years before.
Yes, 5 years
she's
before.
She's cool. And that book is good. Yeah.
Yeah. And somehow. We had a lot of fun. She's a sense of humor, much like mine. And for me, it's got to be funny, right? It just, I just have to have it fun.
Entertaining.
And funny.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I did what I think everybody should do if your goal is to create anything. Mm-hmm. And by the way, when you retire, you're going to be creating a bunch of stuff in retirement, right? Do those things that you love. So Austin Kleon is the guy's name, had a book called Steal Like an Artist. And steal like an artist means take things that you like, that you love, pay homage to them and make it something that's uniquely you, but definitely. And like,
for example, that's cool.
Like,
for example.
Yeah. Like you mentioned, I was at this great bookstore in Portland, Oregon, called Powell's. It's a huge store. Have you been there?
No.
It's a monster bookstore. What happened was it's a city block, and every time a store would go under, it's the way I heard the story anyway, a store would go under next to them, they buy that store and they blow out the wall. So the floors don't line up.
Huh. By the way, it's ironic for a bookstore business, right?
That's right.
Then they're like, oh, the bookstore will just take over the block, right?
Expanding.
Wait a minute. Yes. Like Sears is just going to take over the world. Wait a minute. Yeah.
One thing, cool. And I've been to Portland 3 times, and one thing Cheryl, my wife, and I love to do is we just go to Powell's and we get lost. Mm-hmm. And you just look for inspiration. So I'm in the kids section and I see the Hardy Boys Detective Manual. And dude, when I was in fourth grade, my brother and I carried this thing around. We dog-eared the pages. We learned how to track bad people. We learned how to it was written with the help of a real live FBI agent. So, hey.
I remember Hardy Boys.
Yes.
I remember reading all
that. It was great.
And the Cub, and then were you, I guess you were probably a Boy Scout, right? Or Cub Scout?
I was a Cub Scout.
Yeah.
But yeah, so my mom, by the way, she would, whenever she'd touch a doorknob, my brother and I are there with the tape and we're like taking her fingerprint off the, like mom didn't do anything bad. But anyway, so I thought, what if there was a book that people, adults, would carry around like I carried that around?
Yeah.
Like, is there? So that was the spark. Then I came home and my mom had actually been at my house. She has a key to our house and she had dropped off this box of my crap. By the way, I'm 51 years old at the time. My mom's finally letting me have some of my stuff. Right? Finally. Like, thank you, Mom.
Here are your old Cub Scout badges.
Oh, yeah. It was like Joey, you know, with the Little League baseball pictures.
Yeah.
All this.
The memento
stuff.
Box.
Yes.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, but the Hardy Boys or the Cub Scout Wolf guy was in there. And it's great because, you know, we talk about gamification and money and it really works. It helps. If you turn it into a game, it's a lot more fun. And the Cub Scouts were brilliant at that.
Yeah.
They tell you things you're going to need and then they outline what you have to do. And then there's a spot at the bottom, you know, you check the box that you did everything and there's a spot for your mom to sign it.
Right.
Right? That you did
yes,
it at the bottom.
So
stacked was born out of that idea. And I asked Emily and I was lucky she said yes, but it's four sections. The first one is stacking your first Benjamin. Like, mm-hmm. how do you build a foundation? Mm-hmm. And then how do you build a stack of? Now, how do you get rolling? How do you start investing? And then how do you protect your stack? And then how do you build stacks upon your stacks? And every portion of the book is a collection of chapters where you get an achievement. You've got your things you'll need. We explain what you have to do. And at the bottom, there's a spot for your mom to sign that you...
See, really, you could have, it's almost like if you're reading this as a dad or a mom, you're talking to the family about it as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
You had mentioned too, I know you're very principled about basically timeline planning.
Yeah.
And I love the, I would say one of the most helpful tools, you know, when I started the financial planning business 25 years ago, almost as an, I think as an intern, I was doing the financial plans. The advisors are like, oh, that takes forever. Let the intern do the financial plans because they're actually pretty simple.
Yeah. Right?
There's only a few variables.
Yeah.
Like what you have, how much you're going to save, rate of return, inflation rate.
Make sure you get the inflation
what
rate.
What are you going to spend?
Right.
Like, okay, it's just enough variables to make it complicated enough that you do kind of need a program to do it. But, and then what I evolved to over, let's say, many years of working with families, is that I was like, you know, why don't we just draw this thing out?
Yeah.
And then eventually I got it to the point where I would draw my own timeline out. And then I was like, this is maybe even more helpful than a 30-page plan. So I ended up with this like one-page retirement plan with almost like architecting it out. But then I did an algorithm. We actually did it on our website too. But I want you to talk through timeline, like
yes.
how important that is and just setting. How do you think about that?
We call this in the book, by the way, it's chapter one. It's one rule to rule them all, right? It is one rule.
Like your mate.
There's one rule, like one ring, you know, mm-hmm. to rule them all. Like Lord of the Rings, we get nerdy, right? Yeah. but I'll tell you the problem is that, so I've obviously as a podcast host, I read a bunch like you do, a bunch of financial books, mm-hmm. right? And every financial book starts with, what are your goals?
Uh-huh.
And so it's become this thing that everybody hears like, yeah, okay, forget about that. Tell me some good stuff. To the point that Ramit Sethi, who has a fantastic book called I Will Teach You to Be Rich. Mm-hmm. Ramit's book says, all the books start with, you know, what are your goals? I'm going to give you actionable advice at the beginning. And so I thought about that. I'm like, what's a way to start a book? And I said, you still got to start with goal setting, mm-hmm. but how do you do that in a way that's actionable? And it totally is what we do in our financial planning meetings, which is this idea of timelining. Because mm-hmm. what I found when you timeline your goals, so you have you as a stick person over here.
Yeah.
And then you've got this line and then we put these bags of money. I'd ask you, okay, when do you want, okay, I want Junior to go to college. When do you want them to go to college? There's a bag of money. Do you know how big this bag is? No, we don't. Okay, we got to figure out that. Uh-huh. When do you want to retire? What was amazing was when we timeline out the goals and we'd see them in relation to each other, those fueled the great conversations we've had next, which was, guess what? You can't afford both of those. Mm-hmm. So do we have Junior help toward their college and I get retirement when I want it? Or do we make sure the kids are good for college and I love my career and I'm going to go a couple years later? I'm going to work a couple more, or I'm going to live on less, right? So timelining.
The one rule of all the rule.
Was timeline your goals.
Yep. Okay.
With the one rule.
One rule to rule them all.
One rule to rule them all. Riffing on the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Yes. Not as fun as chapter six, by the way.
Which is what?
Which is what to expect when you're investing, which is a ripoff of what to expect when you're
expecting.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes.
Did you come up with that or Emily got
I came up with that one.
That's good.
Emily came up with
a lot
of stuff.
How did you meet her, by the way? Just podcasting?
Yeah. And the show, the community, the... And then she and I don't remember what it was, but just our nerd humor. It was.
She's cool though. She's a good writer.
We laughed our heads off writing the book.
Was it hard to do the collaborative writing thing?
We split it in two. She wrote half of it and I wrote half of it. And then we took the chapters and she put her voice on my chapters and I put my voice on hers.
Oh, cool.
So they'd be much more smoothed out. And that made it really, it really easy. I'll tell you, a lot of people say that writing a book is hard, and it is hard. But I hear from some authors, it's painful. Nothing about writing this book was painful. Mm. It was super, super fun.
You know, where would I land on that? I would go, I guess I always would think of it this way, is that I don't like writing, but I love having written.
Yeah.
And I am so glad that this one, though, What the Happiest Retirees Know, I loved doing it, but the editing process on this one was just like, there's so many years of research and so many different charts and these relationships between money and happiness. The editing of it was like 7 rounds. And by like round 4 or 5, I was like, Mallory, can you just please do the rest of this? And then I remember like going over it again and like the 6th time, and I'm like, this isn't quite right. And I'm like, how many times do we have to go over this? Anyway, finally, hopefully there's no.
We had the same thing. It took forever. We had an editor. We had 3 alpha readers, and they all.
What's Buddha, an alpha reader?
First round reader, like somebody that's going to be.
Oh, you have like an alpha reader, beta.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So go through the. I think it's software development terms, barrel.
Yeah.
I have no idea. But yeah, so they're reading it in its ugliest form. And they gave us some brutal comments. And I thought when we turned it into Penguin Random House that this was going to be like golden. And then
that's what you expect, right? You're like, God, I put my heart and soul into this. And this is my baby. You love my baby. Yes. It's pretty, right?
And like, then Nina gets a hold of it. And holy cow. My book was more red than black words on the page. There was so much red. But you know what? She was a ninja.
She was helpful.
She could say things in one word that took Emily and I 6. Mm-hmm. And like you said, Emily's written, I think 5 books.
She's a great writer.
This was my first book. And she could just, she could say what we wanted to say so much better. It was awesome. I'm in awe.
The other great thing about it too, once the book forces you just to have a set of things that you can quickly get to, because it's a blessing to have 1,000 podcasts and 1,000 interviews, but it's also can be a curse if you don't wrangle it. And the book forces you to wrangle your best stuff. One more financial planning topic is income.
Yes.
So income is a center of a lot of the investment side. I like to think through. Tell me about income for you.
Wow. Income, like how do
in
I make
in general, like whether it's income
during retirement?
Here's a statistic that from one of my research verticals has been about the number of different income sources. So it's the amount of income I found is less, and this is in relation to retirement happiness. And you can define happiness a lot of different ways. It can be comfort, peace of mind. I call it happiness in all of my writing. But the number, and I ask the question, if I do this with an audience, would you rather have one $10,000 check every month, it comes to the mailbox, or 10 $1,000 checks come to the mailbox?
Yeah.
And immediately I start to think, just give me the one $10,000 check. And then you start to think, what if the mailman doesn't come? Or what if like this one source gets cut off?
Yeah.
So the thought here is that having 10 $1,000 checks gives you tributaries to run into a big stream.
Yes.
And there's a huge peace of mind to that. And in the research I have, it's happy retirees actually have 3.5 different income sources.
Yes.
Whereas the unhappy group has closer to 2.5 or
that's
less.
Interesting.
So there's something about the diversification of how I get my income that is literally leads to a greater peace of mind. And it's less about the nominal value and more about getting it in different ways. So I just want to ask you about
that. It's like peace of mind, you're saying. It's got to be. Like, we tend to worry about the one thing, right? When there's 500 great things going on in your life, we worry about the one bad thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like there's something there.
It could be part of it.
Yeah, so my basic thoughts about income have changed a lot. I still believe the number one way to get more money, if you work for somebody else, ask for a raise. Mm-hmm. Studies show that your boss usually wants to give you a raise and is open to it.
Earmuffs.
Your boss totally wants to give you one, but you haven't asked. Mm-hmm. Now you can't go in and say, "Hey, I need more money." Like, you have to build a case for yourself. You have to build why and how you'd be more valuable to the team. But every study shows that's great. So and I've known that stat for a long time, and I've seen that updated by Glassdoor and other people on an ongoing basis. That hasn't changed. What's changed though is my mindset around what you're talking about, these secondary income sources. Mm-hmm. I used to think, why would you want to have a side hustle? Why would you have a side business when you can get really good at this one thing?
Hmm. Yeah.
And then I was talking to, again, the guy I mentioned earlier, Austin Kleon, was on our show, and I presented that to him. Because he talks about having these side things. I'm like, why would you have all these side things? And you know what he said that was really cool? He said the side gigs that you have actually inform your main thing. So mm-hmm. he said that he likes to play guitar, as an example. He doesn't make any money on it, mm-hmm. but he likes to play guitar. And he has some of his best ideas about his business when he's playing guitar.
Cool.
And I find that when I'm deep buried in work about the podcast or the mm-hmm. making of the podcast, I don't get any creative stuff out of that, Wes. I get creative thoughts when I'm on mile six of a 10-mile run out on the trail, you know?
It is weird. I would love to know the phenomenon. No one's ever explained to me why. I would say about 90% of my ideas come within about 20 minutes of waking up and getting ready for work. Like for some reason, between brushing teeth, shaving, that routine, it's like almost, I can visually remember my first book idea came to me that morning. I don't know it's what it is, but
yeah,
it's, I get like 20 minutes a day where all my ideas come, and then the other 23 hours and
just know, working
40 minutes, it's like a blank slate. Let me ask you too about the podcast, because you guys are the kings of this industry. I know you know this, but I'm going to remind you. You guys had started almost a genre of financial advice. It's like fun. Like you kind of were the people that started that. Now there's other shows that kind of do that.
Yeah.
What do you think is next, one? And two, how do you guys just consistently keep coming up with new and entertaining stuff?
Well, thank you for all that. We have worked very hard, but the...
Oh yeah, hard work, by the way. That's one thing. Oh, wait a minute. That's part of the recipe? Oh yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's real. Yeah.
There's days it still sucks.
Yeah.
There are days. But generally... You have to, I don't know, Wes, I look at this, I think, differently than some financial podcasters think about it. I look at it as an art form. I look at it as this creative endeavor that I'm doing. I'm not trying to shove financial tidbits down my listeners' throat. And don't get me wrong, I want the show to be smart and I want there to be tidbits.
Yeah.
But I'm much more interested in it being creative
and fun
and entertaining, so that really our goal is to have new people that wouldn't talk to you or me, that we're welcoming them into this community, right?
Yeah, you want people to, your education and then I guess communication about money is really important.
Absolutely. We want it to be smart. So we'll do a bunch of financially adjacent stuff that keeps it fun. Mm-hmm. Like when I'll talk to a historian, we talked to General Mary Kay Eder recently about her book is called The Girls Who Stepped Out of Line. And it's actually, you ever watched the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel?
You know, I think I have like that on my saved list.
Fantastic
watched it yet.
Yeah,
obviously, it's an Amazon Prime,
yes,
isn't it?
Yeah. Won a bunch of awards. The woman who plays her manager on that show gave a speech at the Emmys when she was accepting her Emmy about her grandmother, and that her grandmother was in a line mm-hmm. in Nazi Germany. Mm. And she knew that she was going to be shot in the back by a soldier and fall into a mass pit. They mm-hmm. knew that. She was walking toward it. And the woman said to the guard, she said, "What would happen if I stepped out of line?" And the guard said, "Well, I don't have the heart to shoot you, but somebody will." So she stepped out of line. And then the woman had her trophy and she said, "I wouldn't even get this trophy if it weren't for my grandmother stepping out of line. And so we talked about this bravery and about how we're dealing with these little things, and we have trouble doing these little things, right? Mm-hmm. When it comes to our financial money, we have trouble managing our credit card or doing these things. And Mary Eder's talking about these women that did these incredibly courageous things. So we're trying to take these things that ostensibly have nothing about mm-hmm. money and hopefully marry them to money. But it's mostly about keeping it fun for us, Wes. I mean, we keep changing the show mm-hmm. to make it fun to make. If it's not fun for me, how do I expect anybody else to have fun listening to it?
So you just have to continue to work at this. And when we talk about different income streams, it is 100% of your time?
It's
100%.
It is. Yep. I do this as my...
Well, and your book.
I do this as my full-time gig. Yeah, but I guess Stacking Benjamins, because as you know...
They're all combined.
Yeah, it's no longer being a... And this is what my talk was about that I just came from, that we're no longer podcasters. Mm-hmm. I started off as a podcaster. Now you're Joe Salcihi and Stacking Benjamins, and we kind of got to find people where they are. So we're now venturing into YouTube. We just started a TikTok channel. I'm 53 years old. What the hell am I doing on TikTok? Yeah. I know. doing more...
My kids kids will show me TikTok.
So yeah, TikTok's cool. Yeah.
Instagram Live, Instagram Reels, doing mm-hmm. just trying to meet our audience everywhere now. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
And you have a whole, how big is the team, by the way?
Six of us. Okay. There's six of us. Yes.
Tell us about some of your sponsors. You help Navy.
Navy Federal. And then Navy Federal Credit Union is a sponsor of ours. They're great.
Too, or?
Well, we did a thing for PetSmart that was pretty fun. Talking about how Cooper the cat's the most important employee in the basement. That was fun.
Cooper's the most important. Yes. Cooper. Mallory has not brought any of her cats. Pumpkin Spice Latte hasn't showed up on the set just yet.
No, is your cat named Pumpkin Spice Latte?
Yeah.
Oh, that's the best name. I thought Cooper was a cool name, but Pumpkin Spice Latte, I think that wins the day.
Amazing.
By the way, it's awesome. We fight about pumpkin spice latte on our show because I love them. And OG thinks that they're too feminine sweet. For him. No,
too
feminine.
To me, they're they're just too sweet.
No, they're great.
Oh, you're having, I'm going to say,
I can't. Interview's over.
I'm out. Are you going to drink a beer later tonight?
I hope so.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm going to come try to find you. I'm
hosting the Plutus Awards. By the way, that's a good organization. The Plutus Foundation.
Tell us a little bit about Plutus.
Yes, please. The Plutus Foundation. I'm on the board, so mm-hmm. I'll tell you I'm very biased, but they...
Unobjective advice here.
Yes, very... I'm not objective at all. But I do think there's so many unheard voices and there's so many niche issues and people mm-hmm. that think that, you know, financial literacy is beyond them. Mm-hmm. You look at the number of people who don't have bank accounts because, mm-hmm. and it's not because they don't know better, Wes, you know, they do know better. It's because they don't trust banks. Mm-hmm. They'd rather go to a payday lender than to a bank. And so, so Plutus helps is a foundation that helps creators reach some of those niche areas mm-hmm. where we definitely need, people need more help.
Wait, so Plutus creators as in artists, podcasters, tell me who's the Plutus Foundation audience would
help if you had a project mm-hmm. where you wanted to find an underserved community mm-hmm. and go in there with whatever it is. There's a woman that that the Plutus Foundation helped who has like a bookmobile mm-hmm. in, I believe it's Baltimore, but it's all finance stuff. So she brings the bookmobile with financial okay. literacy stuff into a neighborhood where, you know, where they could definitely use it.
And you guys help raise money for Plutus yes. to be able to support these yes. projects.
And so the Plutus Awards mm-hmm. is to help the Plutus Foundation.
And that's tonight here in Austin.
And that's tonight. And we're recognizing a lot of the best and brightest creators.
What else are you doing today between now? You've already given a keynote. You've already given a talk. You're going to host the Plutus Awards.
I go from here to warm up to the walkthrough. Then we're doing a live recording of the Stacky Benjamin Show. Then OG and I are going to my hotel room where we're recording an episode.
Okay.
And then I'm doing the Plutus Awards. And then I'm cool, finding Wes and getting drunk.
Yes. I can't wait for that. I can't wait for that tonight. Really, Joe, just very cool to have you on here. It's cool that we're in Austin, my favorite second, third home city.
You are somebody I've wanted to meet for a long time. So I'm so happy that
I'm really glad we
got to meet finally.
Well, God bless you. Thank you for coming. And it's always educational to hear from you. So, and when does Stack's already out?
No, December 28th. I should say that too. December 28th, the book comes out.
Pre-sale?
Yes. And you know—
Is it ready for pre-sale?
It is.
Okay,
You know as an author, and by the way, this is for everybody. If you want financial literacy and you want more people to know about financial literacy, getting people like you and I and any other creator on these lists mm-hmm. is so important to get the word out. So mm-hmm. whether it's my book, your book, anybody's book, if you want to see more people in this community, pre-order their book mm-hmm. because hopefully that moves us up the Amazon rankings, which mm-hmm. people then see that. And maybe, you know, maybe the Wall Street Journal rankings, or heaven mm-hmm. forbid, we hit the big time and get the New York Times.
NYT.
But that's all, as you know, it's all pre-sale.
Yeah.
It's all pre-sale.
Well, actually, I didn't realize that until the last couple of months. My team has told us that.
Yes.
Is that if you're the pre-orders, then it's almost like, you know, 50,000 people buy the book all at one time. And then that's how you get to on the list. So
yes.
Pre-order stacked.
Yes. Stacked. Wherever you find books, or just go to stackingbenjamins.com/stacked.
Awesome. Joe. Thank you, my friend. Great, man. Awesome. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Hey, y'all, this is Mallory with the Retire Sooner team. Please be sure to rate and subscribe to this podcast and share it with a friend. If you have any questions, you can find us at wesmoss.com. That's WESMOSS.com. You can also follow us on Instagram and YouTube. You'll find us under the handle Retire Sooner Podcast. And now for our show's disclosure. This podcast is provided to you as a resource for informational purposes only and is not to be viewed as investment advice or recommendations. This information is being presented without consideration of the investment objectives, risk tolerance, or financial circumstances of any specific investor and might not be suitable for all investors. It is not intended to and should not form a primary basis for any investment decision that you may make. Always consult your own legal, tax, or investment advisor before making any investment or financial planning considerations. Please refer to the full disclosure in the podcast description for any additional information.